And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 189. I am your host, Silas Enstein. Samantha's on assignment. Welcome to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Today's episode is a Black and a Half reviews episode where I just have two films this week. Just two films. Maybe I'll talk about a TV show. Two films and a TV show. Okay, so we are going to be talking about Spider-Man No Way Home, the new latest Marvel Sony collaboration, and new on Netflix, The Unforgivable. And I'm going to briefly touch on the HBO Max series Love Life. Season 2 is out and just finished it. I want to talk about it a little bit here. So that's what we're doing today's episode. Thank you so much to everybody who listens to the show. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you too would like to become a Patreon supporter for just as little as $1 a month, you can join the League of Extraordinary Listeners. That's right. Just go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And and you can become a member or upgrade that, become an Inner Circle member like Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. They're Inner Circle members. You could be too. Get your name said on the air until too many people sign up for that. And I don't have time anymore, but yeah, become an Inner Circle member. It'd be fabulous. It would help us out a lot. You could also go to Apple Podcasts for us and give us a 5-star review and some comments. That would be greatly appreciated if you haven't done that. Think of that as a Christmas present to Silas and Samantha. Think of it that way. And let's see, what else can you do? You can go listen to my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein, where I educate and empower home buyers all across the nation. I do that via that podcast. Go to yourbuyingahome.com or wherever you listen to the podcast, like this podcast, you can probably find it there. Just look for it. And of course, if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, my day job is real estate, and I help buy and sell homes. And you can, I can help you out. Love to help you out. Love, come on. You know I can help you. So there's that. And folks, I just want to put a little correction note out there for last week's episode. Last week's episode, I made an error in the discussion, and the person with me didn't catch it, Renee, and but it was an error. Someone else pointed it out, and I don't know why. Last week, I said during my West Side Story review that Rita Moreno in West Side Stories had a great 3 years because that she was in The Heist and Encanto. She was not. She was not. And it's funny because Google search even throws Rita Moreno in The Heights, and she's not. For some reason, I mixed her up with Olga Meredes. She plays Abuela in The Heights, and then she does the singing voice for Abuela during Encanto. And I don't know why I pulled out Rita Moreno. For some reason, I thought I'd heard that at some point. So that was just an error, and I just want to clarify it that I caught it. We record these episodes fast after seeing some of these things, and it slips, or I got an error. But thank you for corrections, audience members who listen to this. It was not Rita Moreno, and I hate mixing up people, especially of color, and you know, it's so embarrassing. We're not all the same, us people of color. I am not Denzel Washington. Sometimes people don't understand that. Like, how can you not be? Look at your abs. Like, no, it's not me. Anywho, so right now I want you to open your heart and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 189. Black and a Half Reviews.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Fuzzy. Fuzzball. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Fuzzball.
Live long, live long, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper.
Oh my goodness. This is a hard one. Spider-Man No Way Home, because I have this no spoiler situation thing that I like to do. I don't like to spoil things. So then I get stuff like Spider-Man shows up and I want to talk about it so much. The tough part about this film, it's almost hard to talk about anything in it that's not in the trailer, because it spoils it. Like there's so much to this film. There's so many little twists, so many little turns in it. So many, I don't know if you call them cameos, appearances, things that will affect the Marvel universe in the future. I think some theories on my side. So I kind of want to do an episode to talk Spider-Man after. Maybe I'll do one of those, but this is just going to review it. So look, I'm going to try to stick to what was in the trailer as I talk about it. I think the cast list is a little bit spoilerage. Don't look at IMDb if you don't want the cast, you know, if you don't want to get anything spoiled. So, it's of course, Spider-Man. Everyone knows Spider-Man, based on Spider-Man by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. It has Spider-Man. It's an action film. Runtime of 148 minutes. Dang, that's a long movie, and it did not feel like it. $200 million budget. What? Okay. Directed by John Watts. Written by Chris McKenna and Eric Sommers. Starring Tom Holland, Zendaya, Benedict Cumberbatch, John Favreau. That's all I want to say. There's other names on here, but I don't want to ruin anything. Oh, I forget the dude's name. You saw from the trailer, Dr. Octavius is on it. He's in it. So I can spoil that part. But which actor is he? Which character does he play? I think he plays. I just don't want to ruin it. I'm afraid I'm going to mess up which one he play. Here it is. Here the basic plot of it, which we know from the trailer. Okay. Spider-Man at the end of the last film, Far From Home, he got outed that he's Peter Parker. Right? Okay. So the film picks up right there, right when he's outed. Okay. Like no time passes. And we are, and so there is fallout from this exposure to him, so that him and his friends' lives are rough right now. Things are happening to them and he wants to fix it, especially for his friends. So he goes to Doctor Strange, originally hoping he could do like a time travel thing, but Doctor Strange doesn't have the time stone anymore, right? So Doctor Strange comes up with a spell to make people forget that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. It's going to cast it all over the world. It's an intense spell. Spider-Man starts dinkering with the spell in the middle of him casting it. Messes it up. Which, they kind of contain it, but then Spider, it had some side effects happen for a little bit before it could be fully contained, causing sort of a little rift in the multiverse, allowing I'll say at least one character that we saw in the trailer to come through from Spider-Man's, an alternate Spider-Man, which was the Sony Pictures one, actually, right? So then as you imagine, mayhem erupts to a degree. We get a bunch of side effects from that. And so now Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is forced to correct everything that went wrong and try to bring it all back to normal. And I kind of feel like that's all I can tell you about the film without doing a spoiler. Now, obviously, the lesson of this film is, as bad as things seem, they could always be worse. So probably it's better to deal with the problem you have than to just to try to wish it away, right? Because there's ramifications. There's ramifications for actions done, whether you're messing with the time continuum or try to use this sorcerer magic. There's going to be ramifications. So yeah, be careful. And maybe it's just better to deal with the problems you have than try to recreate things. This is a fast-paced movie. I had no idea it was 2 hours. No, 2.5 hours. My gosh. It is a film that I think you'll thoroughly enjoy it if you're a Spider-Man fan, MCU fan. I think it is the best Spider-Man that they've put out yet. It is, I was thinking about how comic books, like so much of today's Marvel movies, it's amazing because, oh, if they dreamt of it, now they can do it. They can make it on screen. I absolutely loved it, especially after things like the Eternals. You know, Marvel started heading in this direction of grandiose plots of where the implications aren't just on Earth, that they're the entire universe. And the Celestials is making a little, I don't know if it's heady, but it's a little, the Eternals, yeah, it's making it to galactic scale. And I think one thing that the Marvel Universe has always had an advantage of is it was all grounded and relatable. And Eternals was very much not relatable, I think. But Spider-Man, for some reason, it brings it all, despite it being the success of the writing here. Multiverse is a very complex and huge thing, right, to talk about. But they still centered it on the relationships, the people, New York City. And so we still related to the characters, to the characters that we should. And that's where Marvel's strength is at. And I think that's what they should keep going with. And this was hopefully a pivot back to the right direction. Let's keep it grounded sort of in some sort of reality, at least to a relatable reality to us mere mortals. And I think that's why Thor struggles a little bit of the films, you know, because they tend to also be a little more about gods or whatever. These are Earth's problems, and they're dealing with Earth, and not even New York, dealing with New York. And, you know, I think ultimately when I go to a film, I'm searching for that moment. What is it like to be human? I want to connect with that. And this Spider-Man allows me to. So I think that's a credit to the writing. I think the writing on this is really great for superhero film. It has some very, very touching moments for, I think, both long-term and new fans. There's some feelings are had for sure during this, and you'll know them when they get there. It should pull a lot of heartstrings in this film. There's a lot of fan service in the film, which is great. Little nods to things that longtime fans will get, and you'll get to cheer about them, and it'll be wonderful. So just enough fan service, not too much. But overall, I don't have anything negative to say about the film. I truly think it's a great, great film. Well done action film, right? There's obviously some, when you're messing with the multiverse, there's some things that happen in the film that make me go at the end and go, well, that doesn't make sense. Or wait, shouldn't it be this way? This thing is going to be best enjoyed when you don't put your thinking caps on too tight at the end of this. We're going to have to go with the flow a little bit here. Okay. Okay, people. But it is by far, it's definitely an excellent, excellent film that you should watch, and watch quickly. Don't wait on this, because spoilers are going to come out about it. And so, interesting note about the film is it was originally slated to come after the next Doctor Strange film, Multiverse of Madness, but because of COVID and everything, they rearranged schedules, so they had to do some rewriting on this. And I'm interested to know later what that rewriting was that affected it. So the Multiverse of Madness is coming after this, and it wasn't supposed to, but I could see that this one is making the Multiverse of Madness, how it could make it possible a bit more, is what I think. That's my fan prediction. Yeah, check it out. I give my love it, leave it, and like, love it, like it or lose it. That's my 3L system. Love it is that film that you tell people they need to see immediately, whether it's call them, text them, Facebook, see it immediately. Got to see it. Like it, broad range. You like the film, put your remote down to watch it. And lose it is I spent my two hours watching the film, so you don't have to. Spider-Man No Way Home gets a love it. Next up, The Unforgivable. It is a Netflix film, 2021 drama, directed by Nora Fingshit. Written by Peter Craig. It is based on 2009 British miniseries Unforgiven, written by Sally Wainwright. Stars Sandra Bullock as a woman who attempts to rebuild her life after serving time in prison for committing a violent crime. Also stars Vincent D'Onofrio, John Bernthal, Richard Thomas, Linda Emmons, Aisling Franciosi, Rob Morgan, and Viola Davis. Smaller part by Viola Davis. Okay. And it was went on limited release November 24th and went streaming on December 10th on Netflix. And let's see, the length on it is 114 minutes. And man, box office for these, it's fun. No idea what the budget was and whatnot, but it brought in $13,000. That house small, limited release, really probably opened like three screens. That's like, cause that's like four tickets and a large popcorn. Really? Sandra Bullock, man, she has come a long ways from the days of Miss Congeniality and While You Were Sleeping, those kind of movies, a little ingenue. So interesting about this film is, so it deals with the release, The Unforgivable deals with her release as a prisoner from a prisoner, says violent crime. So she shot a sheriff. She did not shoot the deputy, but she shot a sheriff. She killed a sheriff. So she's got this label as a cop killer. You're a cop killer. You're a cop killer. And it's funny. I mean, nobody's pro cop killer, right? Nobody's really into that, right? But they definitely throw a stigma on her as a cop killer that's like from the 1980s. Well, the cop killers were the worst of the worst. And now nobody wants a cop killed, right? But I don't think it has the stigma as much from everybody. Like, acting like a child molester. She's not, and you should not kill anybody. Don't kill cops. But like, there was this extra thing I remember in the 80s that, like, oh, if they kill a cop, they could kill anybody. I don't know about that now. We do put it on a pedestal so high. That pedestal's not there anymore. But it's a funny thing on it. Oh, by the way, this takes place in Seattle, and I had no idea until I started watching it. And it's so neat watching everything done in Seattle neighborhoods. And a funny thing here, little bit of spoiler, not really about the film plot or anything, but she has to go from, she's staying in downtown Seattle, and then they're like, oh, I got to go up to Snohomish because she's kind of trying to find her sister. Her sister and her were getting evicted, and so she's clearly lost some sort of custody of her. She seemed to have some sort of custody of her, and she lost it. And she's just trying to find her that she's had no contact since she's been in prison for like 20 years, right? But she's living in downtown Seattle, International District, and she has to go up to Snohomish, and they have her go over this bridge on a bus. And I'm like, that's not a bridge here. Well, I don't know where that bridge is. And you don't have to take that. I realized, okay, you do have to technically take a bridge to get from downtown up north at all. Just a little, I don't know, not a university bridge. I don't know what it is. Just I-5 going over between Lake Union and Lake Washington. But that's not the bridge. It almost looked like the Tacoma Narrows Bridge or something. And it's interesting. It made me think about filmmaking, how they will want you to show that time has passed and that she's traveling. You want to show, oh, it's so far away, she had to take a bridge. But there's no bridge like that going up to Snohomish. It'll walk a while. I'm impressed that I don't know how many bus stops she would have to take to get to where she goes, but ugh. This film is a drama, and it stays at the drama note most of the film. There is a couple little moments of joy, little moments of happiness in it early on. But man, if I'd say one thing about the film is I would like to see the notes of it and the tone vary a bit more. Her parole officer in this, man, he's was one note the whole time, like, and on her. And I don't know if that's how parole officers are all the time, but man, he was hard on her, like about, like, you, nobody's gonna want to work with you because you a cop killer. Like, no, chill out, come on, have some, be motivational. And he's trying to get her to learn how to survive out there, because in the film talking about how people who are let out of prison have a hard time getting back into society. And let me say, a solid point on here, I do like Sandra Bullock in this. Like, she does, she has these moments where she shows that she's like, don't mess around with me, I've been in prison. Like, boom, like, oh, she'll get you. And haven't seen her so many films. I don't know if I've ever seen that side of her. And I can see why she picked this film, because it shows a different side of her. A less soft side. I just wish there was a little bit more variety in the performance and in the tone of the film overall through it. It's not a bad film. It's not a bad film. It's okay. It's okay. It's an okay watch. If you're in Seattle, it's a must see, because you got to see the Seattle sights, right? It's wonderful there. But I don't know. You know, I was trying to think of the lesson of it, because I don't know how much you can figure out about the film early on. I don't know when you figure out the ending, where this is going with it. But I think there's a lesson, something about no matter how much you think you know somebody, there's something you don't know. And I think it wants to teach you to maybe still look for kindness, look to give kindness, even on people who, from what you've heard, don't deserve it. Certainly not always the case. I don't know when you're going to pick and choose from that, but this film wouldn't exist unless she has something redeemable, right? Films are always about people with redemption possibilities. I watched it because of Sandra Bullock. I will say that was a good casting choice. It made me want to see what she did in it. What's going on in here? It's not an Oscar worthy performance, but I think it was definitely a strong show of a side of her. I wish the script had more variety in it to show her. But love it, like it, or lose it, I'm going to give this a like it. I did enjoy the film. I did enjoy watching it. And yeah, I'm safe for a Sandra Bullock fan. Check it out. Okay. Lastly here, I want to touch on a show called Love Life on HBO Max. We just hit season 2. And this season, this is an interesting series. It's called, considered an anthology series. The premise of it is, okay, season one. So season one starred Anna Kendrick, okay? It's a romantic comedy series, and it seems to take one person, and one person's going to have so many people that they fall in love with, or relationships in their life, right? And it seems to be a sort of study on each person they date from a certain time period, that how each relationship kind of influences your next, or influences you as a person until you're ready to meet the one. And the one could have been someone you've met before, or it could be somebody new, right? The one you want to be with. And so the first season, and it was, and again, I just thought it was going to be about her. This next season, I just saw it pop up on HBO, and it stars William Jackson Harper, who plays Chidi on The Good Place. And I was fascinated because I really like him as an actor, and I've been wanting to see more of his work. And so it follows him, but this time through a black man's perspective. And so it's interesting seeing the love life there, and someone who he starts off with him married in a, he's married to a white woman, and he's a book editor, And we actually see him at a wedding of Anna Kendrick's character that happens about mid-season through it. So it's not how she ends up, but he's at her wedding. So it does connect there. Anna Kendrick's character is a friend of a girl he meets at that wedding. Not this, who's not his wife, but who is somebody important for the series. And so I love this connection, and I love this premise. And so almost each episode is a new person you're with, a person you're dating. There may be one that's more like, oh, these are people in the lives, an influential weekend, we might say. And it's just such a fascinating way to do a romantic comedy series, to not just, you know, not taking moments in someone's life, but like popping in, you're popping in and out and seeing this is like, oh, 8 months later, like 3 months later, not a consistent time difference because life isn't that way. And see the different kind of relationships people want with each other. I think it's a fun and inventive show. This last one, it takes place, I have to do some reading on it to see how much fully, but it took place during the pandemic because BLM comes up and we have an episode where there's isolation, episode of being with somebody that you're stuck in a pandemic with. So I'm curious if part of it was shot before, like how much was shot before, you know, because we have all these COVID protocols. It's hard to know whether if they're just pretending COVID doesn't exist in shows, or if it was just happened to be shot before it, right? So this definitely involves that. So yeah, I'm saying so a bunch. I don't know why. Anyway, fun series. I think you should check it out. I'm going to give the series. I love this series. I love it. And I want to see, I'm looking forward. I hope they announce a season 3. I want to see who they're following the next time. I really do. For a series, I love it. Check it out. I am a romantic comedy person. I'm into it. I'm into romantic comedies. And so if you hate romantic comedies, don't watch this at all. But I do. So I say watch it. All right. So that's it, folks. That's the program. That is Black and a Half. Thank you so much for tuning in. This was a reviews edition, of course. Got some more interviews in the works here. I thought I had one happening this week, but it didn't end up working. But we'll get some more of those, and some of these reviews I even might start writing and doing instead of putting them on. I might write them out and just have more discussions on this. Like, I want to discuss Spider-Man in depth, and I want you to tune in to hear that. So that may be a future episode. Gotta find my spider nerds. Are you spider nerds out there? Let me know if you're a spider nerd. I appreciate it. Anyway, Black and a Half.
Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive. Join us.
Live long and prosper. And prosper.